I'm Tom Hudson. Coming up on the Sunshine Economy, diagnosis, healthcare in South Florida. How healthy is the healthcare business here? After all, job growth in the industry has slowed recently. Government healthcare budgets have gotten much tighter, and the individual insurance mandate of the healthcare insurance reform law is on the horizon, taking effect January of next year. What can we expect? Meantime, there's a huge difference in the cost of care between hospitals, even if they're just miles apart. Insured patients may not pay the quoted prices, but why such wildly different costs for the same procedure? It's the Sunshine Economy, diagnosis healthcare in South Florida, and it's next on WLRN. It can start with a siren. An emergency, a healthcare emergency, a heart attack, or a broken ankle. You're rushed into the emergency room. Greeted by teams of doctors, nurses, technicians, and others, making up one of the largest industries in South Florida. This is the Sunshine Economy. Welcome to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. It's diagnosis healthcare in South Florida here on WLRN. Caring for us is a huge business. It's a big business. About 1 in 10 of us work directly in the healthcare industry. It generates billions of dollars in the local economy. Lots of frustration, certainly, as well. The paperwork. You've got the prices. The opacity of the prices. And then, of course, the people that work in healthcare. You can join the conversation online at WLRN.org or on Twitter. The handle is at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. A lot ahead in the next hour here on the Sunshine Economy. Any discussion about healthcare, though, it can quickly get filled with statistics. How much we pay for insurance, how much doctors charge for a visit, your co-pays, how much a trip to the ER costs, the number of people uninsured or the number of people underinsured. Medicare costs, Medicaid costs, prescription drugs, the individual mandate, subsidies, penalties for not getting insurance. And while all that's important to healthcare, and we'll talk about all that here on the Sunshine Economy, the business of healthcare, the industry is about people. It's easy to forget that in the fog of politics and economics. Healthcare is a human interaction between someone in need and a caregiver. And that's where we start this hour. Patients and healthcare workers alike face uncertainty like they have never before. Here's Karen Burkett.
If you study South Florida's economy over the last decade, even during the recession years, you'll find one of the bright spots has almost always been the healthcare industry. The sector added jobs steadily for almost 12 years. That is serious growth. But last year in Miami-Dade County, the healthcare industry lost jobs. Two of the largest healthcare providers in Miami-Dade, Jackson Memorial Hospital and University of Miami Medical School, announced job cuts. Meanwhile, a number of hospitals across Broward and Miami-Dade made smaller eliminations. Didn't really make the headlines. Positions were disappearing in part because federal grant money ran out. Today, many are concerned about the Affordable Care Act, what it means and how it's going to play out financially. Susan Sansan is a certified registered nurse anesthetist who came to us through our Public Insight Network. She's been working at Jackson Memorial Hospital for 20 years. It's not often you find someone willing to talk openly about their fears of a layoff. Susan did.
Do you and your colleagues worry for your jobs?
Every day.
Why?
Because we see so many changes occurring. Jackson had a lot of financial hardships in the past, and they are trying to trim the fat, and they're trying to consolidate, and they have had layoffs, and so every day people wonder if they're next.
What about outside of Jackson, though? Are others in your profession worrying for their jobs?
Yes, there's a lot of stuff going on politically, trying to restrict our practice, and nurse anesthetists are always worried about their jobs.
Healthcare has long been a dominant, sturdy sector for the South Florida economy. And it seems to be leveling off. There have been some layoffs that have been well documented. What's kind of going on in your industry?
Well, I think everybody's in a watch and wait pattern. With the Affordable Care Act, which a lot of us were very excited to see happen, we're still very unsure how it's going to be implemented, how it's going to affect us. We all know that we need a seat at the table to help these politicians make informed decisions that will include everybody and make sure patients have access to the best quality, affordable health care.
How are federal dollars affecting the local health care market?
With the Affordable Care Act, everyone is going to be mandated to have health care coverage, which is something we're not used to. And health care facilities see that, and they see the dollar signs. These patients represent money to them. And so they're opening all these new services so they can bring those dollars in. And they use all these key phrases about patient care and patient safety, but it's not about the patient. It's about money. It's about the dollars.
Why did you go into nursing?
It might sound funny, but it was just where I fit in. It was more like a calling.
Do you still find it rewarding?
I love what I do. So, yeah, I find it rewarding.
It's hard for you to talk about. I didn't expect that.
I think it's just hard to watch nurses get treated so poorly when they've tried so hard.
You need a moment?
I think nurses get really sidelined a lot. They're not a billable service, so administration doesn't see them as a commodity. They see them more as a burden because they're not a billable service.
Are you afraid after you give this interview?
I've been in South Florida since 1993. Jackson's the best health care in South Florida. If you're sick in South Florida, that's where you want to be. And the health care there is just, it's the best.
The thing that matters most when it comes to the Affordable Care Act for Jackson is the expansion of Medicaid. And the state of Florida hasn't done anything official to allow for Medicaid expansion, which leaves a massive safety net hospital like Jackson in a tight situation. Jackson is going to be competing just as hard for the newly privately insured patients as anyone else, even as it continues to wrestle with the financial realities of one of its core missions, serving the poor and the uninsured. For the Sunshine Economy, I'm Karen Burkett from the WLRN Miami Herald Studios.
Still to come, the personal and emotional pull to work in healthcare. We'll hear from some nurses at Memorial Regional Hospital and Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital.
I said I was going to be a nurse at the age of 6. So I've been a nurse my whole life.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. One common complaint about healthcare is not knowing how much anything costs until you get the bill. Well, for the first time, the government has released pricing details from 3,000 hospitals for 100 of the most common procedures, everything from a heart attack to a hip replacement. A couple of the bosses of some local hospitals are with us here on WLRN. Brian Keeley is the CEO of Baptist Health South Florida, and Steve Sonnenreich is CEO of Mount Sinai Medical Center. Gentlemen, welcome to the Sunshine Economy. Brian, when you hear the nurse from Jackson speaking with such emotion about healthcare, it is a human interaction, but economics play such a large role. How do you begin to address the economics as we're beginning to approach healthcare reform really taking full force in 2014?
Well, Tom, the economics is the reality of life, and a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on that. But at Baptist, we put a huge amount of emphasis, and we focus on what's best for the patient. We're in different financial circumstances than Jackson. I think that gives us an advantage to be focusing on the patient. So that puts us in a different environment. But I think that the vast majority of people, especially the nurses, go into healthcare because they love taking care of people.
Yeah, we heard a lot about that. And Steve, the economics, though, plays such a big role when it comes to a chief executive of a hospital. You're focused on that human interaction that happens in an ER and in a room. But economics, without the economics right, those incentives don't get right. Are we getting incentives right when it comes to healthcare?
Well, the Affordable Care Act is about access and affordability. And so hospitals throughout the nation right now are focused on getting their operating structure to be as efficient as possible so that the mission of our institutions, which starts off with high-quality healthcare, patient safety, is something that's ever being able to be realized.
Mm-hmm. But to that point, though, as we move toward healthcare reform, Steve, and are seeing a release of pricing data that we saw last week, for instance, from the Health and Human Services Department, are we seeing more pricing transparency? Do we need to see more of it in order to have a more economically feasible and sustainable healthcare system here in South Florida?
I don't believe that there is any word that's more important going forward than price transparency. And this past week, the release of data and the reporting of it nationally and locally talked about chargemasters and hospital prices as they impact Medicare. The real story about price transparency is as it relates to employer-paid health care. And without transparency, what we've seen is a rising cost of health care to insurers passed on to employers in the form of employee contributions and the cost of insurance premiums.
Will you see more transparency on the part of Mount Sinai and the providers you work with?
Well, at Mount Sinai, we believe very strongly about price transparency, and we'd be willing to put our prices to all the insurance companies out in public, and we would welcome that kind of transparency from everybody in the marketplace.
Brian, would you do the same thing for Baptist?
We welcome transparency. We've always been strong advocates of transparency, but when you look at the Affordable Care Act, this is a transition from fee-for-service medicine to value-based purchasing. In value, like you buy a car, you're looking at the cost and you're looking at the quality. So I think it's important to be transparent, not only with the quality outcomes and the patient satisfaction information, but also the pricing. The problem with the pricing, it is so convoluted and it's so confusing to most people, because the vast majority of people, you know, the way we are reimbursed by both Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial insurance companies has very little to do with pricing. It's all pre-negotiated rates based many times on an aggregate number per a stay for a diagnosis or per day, not a broken down piecemeal.
Well, one of the things that you learn in the financial markets for them to operate efficiently is transparency and liquidity. We saw that with the housing market, for instance, in the Great Recession in 2008, that when you don't get great liquidity and great pricing transparency, you're unable to have an efficient market. Is healthcare in the same situation, Brian, in that we don't see the kind of transparency that we need to see in order to have a fair and sustainable healthcare system?
Tom, I've lost my microphone.
We can hear you
can
just
you
fine,
now?
Brian.
Can you speak up again?
Sure. So you know, one of the things that a free market needs is price transparency. You have to be able to see what all the players are charging in order to have the market make the right decision and a consumer make a right decision based upon what's right for him and her. Are we moving toward that? What more needs to be done in order for that to happen in healthcare?
I think with the Affordable Care Act, we are moving to that, because the next step is going into bundling. Bundling is really package pricing. So you get one price per procedure, which includes the anesthesiologist, the individual physicians, and all the hospitals all aggregated together. In our urgent care centers, we switched to that just a couple months ago. So there's one single price for all the patients that come in the urgent care center. Mm-hmm. So that's where the whole industry is moving now.
And Steve, to your point of view, would you be the first in the area to put up Mount Sinai's prices for the public to consume?
We would welcome that opportunity, because we consider ourselves to be the highest quality and also the most efficient in the marketplace. I believe that price transparency is going to become more of an issue in 2014, because we're going to continue to see the rising cost of health insurance impact employers, employee contributions, larger deductibles, larger co-payments, and the public is going to scream out for pricing transparency.
Yeah, and it is pricing that really gets the public's attention. We reached out to our Public Insight Network, and Stacy, for instance, exhibits the frustration that many patients feel about the complexity of billing.
Here's where it gets silly. Okay, like, I went and I've had kids at the same hospital, and every time I would get this bill for the anesthesiologist, for instance, and the anesthesiologist's group is under our medical plan, but the individual anesthesiologist is not. And the hospital is part of the plan, but how they do the billing, that anesthesiologist is not covered because it's out of network, even though it's in a hospital. And I literally got to the point where I wrote letters and said, don't let anyone see me unless they're in a plan.
This convoluted nature of pricing, Steve and Brian, you can sense the frustration there with Stacy and the complexity of all the players involved. Steve, as one of those players, as the place where these procedures can happen, what role can you play as a chief executive of Mount Sinai to push forward for this transparency that you're calling for? And are you willing to take that first step locally?
Absolutely. And we're willing to challenge all the others in the marketplace to put the prices that they charge to Blue Cross and United and Aetna and all the other insurers in the marketplace, because I believe Mount Sinai is well recognized as a high-quality institution. And if we're able to operate at prices that others in the marketplace are priced 30-40% higher than we are, then we challenge everybody to get to that level where there could be affordable health care in this community.
Brian, you mentioned some of the qualitative issues that you'd like as well with pricing, but are you willing to take that step and provide the pricing with the qualitative responses?
I think that's where the whole industry is going, undoubtedly.
Why aren't we there yet?
Pardon me?
Why aren't we there yet?
Because it's so confusing now. I think when you look at Medicare pays us on a DRG basis.
What's a DRG basis?
A DRG is a diagnostic code. It's for a single procedure. They have one number for a single procedure. The other federal government, Medicaid, pays us on a per-day basis, not broken down by individual charges, on a per-day basis. Commercial insurance pays us on a DRG, per diem, case rates, discount off charges. It is a mess. If we could aggregate all the information and have one payment methodology, that would simplify it for the normal consumer. But consumers get so confused out there when you have it all broken down into little pieces like that using different payment methodologies.
When the federal government last week released some of this information on 100 common procedures, do you think that confuses the situation when you see the price differentiators or price differentials between, say, for instance, what Baptist charges and what Mount Sinai may charge for the same procedure?
Well, I think the numbers are all over the place. You can be high on one, you can be low on another, but it's not meaningful. You've got to make it meaningful to the consumers.
And how do you make it meaningful? What's the step that Baptist is, you as the CEO of Baptist,
I think what's
take?
Happening is that we're all moving the same direction to come up with package pricing, and it's going to be one single price per procedure, but that'll include everything. It's not going to be done piecemeal, and it has to include the physicians also.
And to that point, again, from our Public Insight Network, Carmen pointed just this out, this piecemeal pricing, and just how irrational it can be.
If you go for an X-ray or MRI or if you have an accident, anything that happens that's an emergency, and also, you don't end up having to pay $5,000 for a, just to see an ER physician. So that you don't have to pay $50 for getting a little cup with Tylenol in it.
Steve, it's a common complaint, right? An aspirin will cost you $25 in a hospital. You could go down to the commissary and buy a bottle of it for $5. So, I keep coming back to this. You talk about offering to be transparent. Guys, from Brian Sonnereich of Mount Sinai, Brian Keeley of Baptist, what's to stop either of you two to take that first step, to be the first in South Florida to post the prices up online in an area where it's transparent for everybody to see, your competitors, but also your consumers?
Steve, we started pricing our UrgentCare centers, and you go in the door, all the prices are listed there. But we took another great step just a couple of months ago. We have package pricing, so it's one single price for the UrgentCare visit. That's a huge step in terms of going in this right direction. But it's just a beginning step. We have a long way to go, because when you look at the charge master, there's probably 80,000 different charges in there. So there's it's a very complex issue that we're discussing.
Steve?
Tom, this is not about Medicare or Medicaid. Yes, Medicare and Medicaid are challenged in this country. But there is a fixed price, as Brian mentioned, a DRG price. This is really about the affordability of health insurance to working people. The largest component of the uninsured population are working uninsured. And it's about having affordable prices to the insurance companies. And so you've incentivized us at Mount Sinai this morning. We will post our prices relative to Blue Cross and Aetna, our contractual prices, and we'll challenge Baptist and the other systems in the community to do the same.
Brian, would you take up that challenge?
We're going to be we've been posting our aggregate prices on our website when you look at our revenues. And we've been posting all of our quality outcomes, and we've been posting our patient satisfaction results. So this is where we're all going. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we are going to have a dynamic marketplace, and it's going to be a market-driven transition we're making, I think all the consumers have to have it done in a meaningful, simple, user-friendly fashion to have the price per procedure and the quality outcomes per procedure along with the patient satisfaction. And then they're going to be an informed consumer to make the appropriate decisions.
We've been getting some comments on Twitter and online at WLRN, hashtag the Sunshine Economy. Steve, when could we expect to see that pricing for Mount Sinai?
I'm going to get back to the office, get together with our chief financial officer, and we'll look at a way to do that. It's quality in this marketplace is superb. When you look at Mount Sinai, Baptist, Jackson, the University of Miami, they're synonymous with quality and patient satisfaction. We all have outstanding people who work at our institutions. This is about one item, specifically what the contractual rates are between our institutions and the various insurance companies. If we could get down to the Mount Sinai price, healthcare will be much more affordable in this community than it is currently.
This is from our online discussion going on right now at WLN.org. Two words, no more important words than price transparency in healthcare. Gentlemen, we have to leave it there. It is the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida. Brian Keeley, the CEO of Baptist Health South Florida, and Steve Sonnenreich, the CEO of Mount Sinai Medical Center. Still to come, this warning from a top health insurance executive in Florida.
Older people in general will get a break on their price, and younger people will get a dramatic increase in the cost of their rates because they're now in a pool with older people.
This is the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Daniel Chang covers healthcare for the Miami Herald. He joins us here in studio. Dan, you covered the HHS, the Health and Human Services, release last week of the pricing data for hospitals. Really the first good look at transparency that we've seen in a long, long time when it comes to healthcare. You just heard from the CEO of Mount Sinai, Steve Sonnenreich, essentially pledged that he's going to put up some of that contract pricing for his medical organization, his hospital. What do you think about that kind of pledge?
I think it's terrific, especially for consumers who will have a better idea of what goes on in terms of reaching their bill and their costs. I think some of the points that they made were very true, though, for most folks, those who have insurance, the prices won't really make a big difference. I think it'll take a little bit longer. More price transparency may eventually lead to lower costs, but it's something that has to begin somewhere, which transparency is a good place.
Why did the Health and Human Services release this price data to begin with? What's the purpose of it?
Well, some of the folks with the Obama administration have indicated that they release this information to give consumers better information, but also I think to put a little bit of pressure on hospitals, insurers, those who provide us with health care or the means to get health care, to perhaps make a more competitive marketplace for health care.
Do you think that health consumers really would take price data, price transparency, and shop around? I mean, a healthcare emergency is a healthcare emergency.
Right. And I don't think that they will. I think more important would be patient satisfaction, quality of care, outcomes, because, again, most Americans, their health care is paid for by insurance. And so they wouldn't pay those prices. Those prices would be largely for the uninsured.
Does insurance insulate those with it from the real care price of healthcare?
No, because I think they have to pay the price at some point that's determined by the insurers. And part of the way that they reach those prices are by determining what the hospitals or what the federal government pays for those.
Yeah.
For those.
So. Yeah, the federal government obviously is the largest insurer out there with Medicare and Medicaid.
That's right.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about the impact of that with a very large healthcare executive here in Florida as well. Dan Chang, along with us, covering healthcare with the Miami Herald. Thank you so much for coming in. Still to come here, robots in the operating room made right here in South Florida. This is the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Conversation is ongoing at WLRN.org and on Twitter at WLRN with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Well, we've heard a lot about the rising cost of healthcare, price transparency, and the role of insurance. 5 years ago, a worker in Florida getting health care through their employer spending about $8,200 a year on average. By 2010, that same worker was shelling out more than $10,000 in health premiums for family coverage. Add in the company's contribution and the healthy insurance premium topping $15,000. Now, Florida Blue is on the front lines of this. It's the state's largest private insurer. Florida Blue is a key link in this healthcare industry between service providers, like we just heard from, in hospitals, as well as patients, consumers. And insurers are always looking to strike deals that involve doctors' offices and hospitals with the idea of tying together the healthcare delivery chain in a way to change the economic incentives from quantity of healthcare to quality.
Those deals are emphasizing value over volume. Our system too often paid fee for service, and the more you did, the more you got. And so that had to change, and it's starting to change.
Pat Garrity is among the Florida insurance executives forging these kinds of deals. Pat is the chairman and CEO of Florida Blue, the largest private health insurer in the state. Pat came to Florida from Minnesota, where he headed up Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. Now, as big as the differences in weather are between Florida and Minnesota, so can be their healthcare systems. A statewide task force in Minnesota described its system like this recently. Quote, "Our state has a reputation for a healthcare system that provides high quality care at relatively low cost compared to other states," end quote. Back in Florida now, one area Garrity says Minnesota is far ahead of the Sunshine State is with electronic medical records, but for a reason, a more integrated health system in Minnesota.
Some of that is related to the Mayo Clinic and the way Mayo Clinic looks at its work. And some of it is related to the community and the folks that settled in Minnesota who were very much sort of clinic-oriented, HMO-oriented in the way they sought their care. In Florida, it's taken more time to get to that place. And it's very clear that when you have larger entities, you can invest more in the software and the expense of putting an electronic medical record together. Independent doctors are less likely to invest the money to put an electronic medical record together. So as we see more integrated groups and larger affiliations happening that include insurance companies in those mix, then you're seeing the investment that's being made in electronic medical records and tighter integration of the way care gets delivered.
2014 is a big year for health insurance, with the bulk of the health care reform law taking effect. Florida Blue has been grabbing customers from competitors, signing up 200,000 Floridians in just the past year. Hardly any of those, though, are people who did not already have health insurance coverage. Large numbers of the uninsured are not expected to get coverage until next year, when government subsidies and state health insurance exchanges come into effect thanks to the health care reform law. At its core, the goal of the health reform law is to increase the pool of those covered, with the hope of slowing down the growing cost of health care. Get more people insured, the thinking goes, hold down rising health care costs for all.
Yeah, one of the challenges to where pricing is going is that it is going to affect people in an uneven way. And when I say that, I mean that we today have five different categories by age in which we set our rates. We also rate by male and female. Mm-hmm. And young females, obviously, in childbearing years are more expensive. They generate more health care costs. By the way, older females are less expensive than older males.
I was just going to ask you, what's the least expensive demographic to be in if you're shopping for health insurance?
Yep. A young male today would be the least expensive person because they generate the least cost just based on the data.
Is that right? So it's not the broken arms from skateboarding accidents that show up in the data then, huh?
That's right. They're largely healthy. They have maybe the acute event, but they don't have ongoing regular health care expense.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the challenge from the healthcare law. The law requires that you take the five age-rated rating categories and squeeze that down to three, and it requires that you remove gender. even though gender wasn't a bias issue, gender actually benefited women who were older versus men who were older. But gender was taken out of the equation by the law. And then we moved from 5 rating categories to 3. So you had 10 rating categories, 5 for women, 5 for men, that have now been shrunk to 3 rating categories. What that means is that older people in general will get a break on their price, mm-hmm. and younger people will get a dramatic increase in the cost of their rates because they're now in a pool with older people.
And that's the big worry. The cheapest, lowest-risk patients to insure, young males, will see the highest insurance premium increases. The calculus could have those who are the lowest risk to insure drop out of the pool altogether because it's just too expensive, which could then raise the cost for everyone else. If you are a young male and you work in an office with older people, could you foresee come 2014 this young male deciding to opt out of his company's health insurance and going into the private market?
So let's start there. I think when we're talking about these rating cells and we're talking about how pricing comes together, we're largely talking about the individual insurance market or the very small businesses that would be in the exchanges. Beyond that, everyone else can still be in their company's coverage, and this rating change doesn't apply to them.
But are you saying that rating change in companies' health insurance in 2014 won't necessarily affect the pricing of that company health insurance?
That's right. But if you're in an individual or small group that's in the public exchange, that's where the pricing impact will come from.
One bright spot here in Florida is that it is a highly attractive market for health insurance companies. There's a lot of competition here. Still, size matters. Florida Blue has the size. 1 out of every 3 Floridians with private health insurance gets it through Florida Blue. That size Garrity wants to use to change how health care is paid for. Again, moving away from paying for how much health care you get to how good the health care is that you receive. But the switch away from the traditional payment system, the so-called fee-for-service, where doctors and hospitals get paid for every individual thing they do, is awfully tough when the biggest insurer in the market, the government, continues to use it.
So if we're trying to change the way the payment model works on our commercial insurance customer and the federal government programs are working at odds with us, meaning they're willing to continue to pay on a fee-for-service basis, then you're sending mixed messages to the marketplace.
Now, for what it's worth, as a CEO of a big health insurer, Garrity himself uses a health savings account where he's responsible for the first $2,500 of his care. Still ahead on the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida, how one piece of health reform already in place may be impacting the medical device business here in South Florida. It's the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. The conversation ongoing online at WLRN.org and on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Among the new rules for healthcare businesses under the health reform law that's already in place, began the first of this calendar year, is a 2.3% tax on medical devices. So as folks try to navigate the individual mandate due to effect January of 2014, medical device manufacturers already have to deal with new healthcare regulations. Pacemakers, defibrillators, other devices doctors put into us to fix worn out or diseased parts are seeing a higher tax. Manufacturers pay the tax. The first payment, by the way, was due to the IRS just a couple of weeks ago. Maurice Ferre wrote a big check for Mako Surgical. Maurice is the CEO of Mako Surgical, based in Fort Lauderdale. Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, Maurice. How big was that check that you had to pay for your medical device tax?
Thank you, Tom. Too big.
You want to put a number on it for us?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, we're just working through it, and it's one of these things that the way the government has approached this tax for companies like Mako, which are fast-growing companies, and they're putting a tax on revenue, which is out of the norm. Usually taxes are off of profit, mm-hmm. and this tax is something that is really causing a huge heartache for a lot of companies our size that are in the cutting edge of innovation, where we're creating jobs and we're not profitable yet, and we're trying to get profitable. And when you have to take money off the top, it really goes into job creation in terms of us developing jobs
for the economy. Have you had to slow down innovation or stop certain types of investments in the local workforce because of this new 2.3% medical device tax that was put in place in January of this year because of health insurance reform?
Yes, we have.
How many jobs do you think have not been created at Mako because of this tax?
You know, I would say we'd probably have... We have about 100 or so engineers that have been working on this at Mako. And I would say this has probably impacted about 20, 30 jobs that we would have done.
Hmm. Has it impacted sales at all? Have you seen health providers? You're selling these robotic devices, for instance, to hospitals and doctors' offices, mostly hospitals and medical care facilities. Have they held back on business with you because of this tax? You're the one who's taxed, though, not them.
Right. You know, this is not transferable. So we can't just transfer the price over, which doesn't make any sense, you know, because from our perspective, this is a tax that is poorly represented. And it was something that shouldn't have happened the way it happened.
You've been an outspoken complainant of this tax even before it came into place. And, of course, supporters will say this tax is designed to raise some revenues, much-needed revenues for the federal government, but also for health care. How do you respond to those that support the tax?
You know, what I think people don't understand is, you know, devices between 1980 and 2000, diagnostic and treatment tools, they increased life expectancy by 3 years. And where we are missing the boat is in this conversation about Affordable Health Care Act is on the value-based medicine. It's going to take technology, it's going to take innovation to help to reduce the care of healthcare, to be competitive from an economic perspective. We have to reduce these costs, and it's going to be technology. It's going to be the type of work we're doing at Mako, where we're improving efficiencies of treating early-stage disease, mm-hmm. where it has a long-term impact on our economy.
Let's talk about the impact, again, from a business perspective in the local workforce. You mentioned how this tax has maybe stopped you from hiring as much. What are you finding in the quality of the local workforce? You're an advanced manufacturer. This is robotics. These are high-tech machinery that involves a lot of innovation, a lot of development in order to get through the regulatory procedures to be put into place in an OR.
You know, Tom, this is an area we're most proud of, being here from South Florida and creating high-paying jobs. In particular, you know, we were just in 2012 the South Florida Manufacturer of the Year. In 2011, we were recognized by Deloitte Touche as the fastest-growing company in North America, and it's right here in South Florida, where the majority of our industry is around tourism, and it takes a real effort to put these opportunities in front of us, where from a job creation on the engineering side, and one of the areas that I'm seeing a lot of activity is at the university level, University of Miami, FIU, Nova, all these schools that are around our areas. The number of engineers that are starting to come up, very talented engineers are coming up, and we're seeing that we can attract those types of students with those types of programs that the universities have actually come to us and said, these are programs that we're trying to do. You guys have a real stellar reputation of hiring, and the opportunities of developing those jobs are here in South Florida.
You're able to retain those jobs, a knock against South Florida, healthcare or not, has been the ability for local companies like Mako and like others to retain those workers here in South Florida, in part because of some community issues and some cultural issues.
Yes. You know, I'm seeing a real shift here where people are starting to see the quality of life here in South Florida, which is from somebody who's starting off, coming out of college as a master's degree program, starting to really enjoy the benefits of what South Florida has to offer. So I think we are competitive in a lot of fronts, and we're able to attract and retain these jobs.
Mako sells these robotic arms across the country. What are you seeing in your sales trends and what does that inform you about healthcare trends in the years ahead and the role that South Florida can play in that?
Well, we want to continue to build a company where we have some of the best companies that have been developed here in South Florida. If you look at companies like Cordis with Dr. Murphy, and mm-hmm. what Dr. Murphy did was absolutely remarkable, and where Johnson & Johnson picked it up, and you look at companies like IVAX with entrepreneurs, real serial entrepreneurs that have really made a huge impact, like Dr. Phil Frost, where now he's the chairman of Teva and has a new company called Opco. Mm-hmm. And in the spirit of that, I think that that's where we want to be in. You know, we see technology, we see the use of robotics as such an important step in automation and efficiencies. We've seen it in large industries. We've seen it in the car industry and automations. And we think that these robotic systems in the operating room is going to be the next step.
Finally, I've got to ask you, you heard from a couple of hospital CEOs earlier in this program talk about price transparency. What role does Mako Surgical and other medical device manufacturers play in that transparency for the end consumer to understand more fully the pricing of healthcare that they're receiving?
Well, we are part of the equation. There is a cost to our technology that comes in. And we spend a lot of time and energy looking at both economic and clinical data to support the cost associated with this. And I think companies like ours, the what's changed and the game-changing piece of the Affordable Care Act for medical device companies like ours are really to focus not only on the clinical data, which we had to do in the past, we really have to look at the economic data. We have to demonstrate and justify why a piece of capital equipment like our system, like the Rio system, is necessary and make that transparent. So we work closely with the hospitals.
It's that quality of care, not the quantity here. Maurice Ferrer, the CEO of Mako Surgical, based in Fort Lauderdale, here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Still to come, some of the nurses of Memorial Health System in Hollywood. This is the Sunshine Economy, Diagnosis Healthcare in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. All of us at one time or another have experienced a healthcare emergency. And let's face it, it's not an economic issue right away. It is an emotional issue. It's emotional partly because of the expense ultimately that we face. It's emotional because of the uneven access to care that we have here in society. And it's emotional because it can be life and death. For most of us, our daily work does not have such significant consequences. Carrie Woods is an RN in the heart surgery department of Memorial Regional Hospital in Hollywood. She says she knew she wanted to be a nurse when she was 6 years old. Like several of the nurses I spoke with at Memorial Regional this week about their jobs, Carrie had a family member who was in healthcare, an aunt in her case.
This month, I've been a nurse for 30 years.
Carrie works with Sarah Ahumada. It was her mother who inspired her to go into nursing.
I worked at my family's bakery for many years. And doing that, my mom said, okay, you need either you can do this for the rest of your life or do something. So, of course, I wanted to become a nurse. So I left Miami and I went to Utah.
But Sarah came back after her grandmother had a stroke to help take care of her. Sarah's sister had become a nurse, and Sarah decided it was the career for her. And there's demand for more like her. As of 2011, the year with the latest statistics available, there were just over 14,000 registered nurses working in Broward County. That was 6% more nurses than in 2008. But in the previous 4 years, nursing jobs in Broward jumped by more than 20%.
October of 2008, everyone in the healthcare industry experienced something. It was a big downturn in the economy.
Ray Kendrick is the Senior Vice President of Human Resources at Memorial Health System.
Because of that big downturn in the economy, two things happened. One, many people who were planning to retire stopped. Those who were coming into the field suddenly couldn't get in because we didn't have the normal outgo with the income. As a result of that, there was less demand, more supply. Now what's happening is the economy's heating up just a little bit. We are seeing the natural outflow because those people who were going to retire in 2008 are now able to retire in 2013. So it's causing a little more demand.
don't look at nursing as job security. Don't look at nursing as money. They have to find it somehow inside of them, in their heart and their soul.
Julie Lee Tart is a nurse manager of heart surgery at Memorial. She jokes she took her nursing boards twice, once when her mom was pregnant with her, and then later after nursing school. After her years as a nurse and now a manager, Julie is concerned about the direction of caring for sick people.
I get disillusioned a lot about what I see going on with nursing and how it's so money-driven now, and it's the bottom line, it's a business now. But it's coming to work. It's working with people like Carrie and Sarah who save lives every single day. It's such a rush. It's an adrenaline rush. And realizing that money or not, I mean, if it wasn't for us, these people wouldn't survive.
Across the street at Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital, I met Michelle McKenzie. She's not a nurse. She's a patient care assistant. It's a job that can involve everything from taking vital signs, transporting patients around the hospital, and drawing blood. She came to healthcare after working in the boom and bust construction industry here.
It's definitely job security, but I don't look at it just as a job security. I do have a love and a passion for the job itself.
Like heart surgery nursing manager Julie Lee Tart said, the job is about caring for people. Michelle's career took a turn after a very personal and emotional experience.
I was a parent here, and I had a child that was ill. And the care that I got here was so phenomenal that I couldn't think of any place else that I would rather be.
Michelle's story had a tragic ending with her child. It happened more than a decade ago, but yet she transitioned from construction, building homes and buildings here in South Florida, to helping families like her deal with the significant issues of healthcare with children. You know, speaking with nurses, you can quickly have a conversation that's clinical in nature, talking about diagnosis and prognosis, but it can be very emotional right away because, again, healthcare is ultimately about human interaction. It is about caring for one another, and it is also about the economics of the world that we live in. All right, next week here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. The end loaders are revving up. The cranes dot the skyline in our region again. We visit the construction of the new Miami Science Museum, a $500 million Miami real estate development attracting others to the market.
Bit by bit, Miami downtown's been putting itself together. So the Arch Center was a really big component. You already had the American Airlines Arena. But the way it's coming together now with the two museums in the park, it's the glue that holds the whole of downtown together.
What about the glue for the local housing market? We've got big multi-million dollar deals that are back. Prices are rising for many home buyers. Are we inflating yet another real estate bubble, though? What about the sustainability of the real estate pricing recovery that we've seen here in South Florida? Can we see that continue? Can we avoid another real estate bubble in the years ahead locally? That's next Monday right here on WLRN, the Sunshine Economy. Join us online at WLRN.org and on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag The Sunshine Economy. Finally, when we speak of healthcare, oftentimes it starts with pain, a simple ache. It's estimated the cost of pain and seeking treatment, medicine, even missing out on work, cost the equivalent of $2,000 for every American, the cost of pain. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening. Incurable pain.